Episode 52 of This Developing Story. I didn't mention last week, but I added Redux to the application, which was pretty easy once I actually sat down and thought about how to implement it in a small way. This week, I actually went to a meetup with Sandy Metz and Avdi Grimm about... It was just basically a fireside chat is what it was called, just chatting with them and asking them questions. And one of the best things I heard from Avdi that he said, and I think Sandy actually echoed the same thing, was that with Ruby, it's a great language to learn. And it's not just a problem with Ruby, but it's just a dynamic language problem where we try to implement a solution. And basically, rather than like zooming out and looking at the problem, we just kind of write code and see what happens. And if it works, then it's good. If it doesn't, then we keep adding to the problem or picking away at the problem rather than like looking over like a higher eagle's eye view of what is happening in the code and actually planning out what to do architecturally. So with Redux, actually, I took that approach, and rather than like hacking away at some problem and injecting it in places, I actually just thought about how to implement it, and I was able to implement it pretty easily after that. So yeah, so I've now got Redux under my belt, so that's a good thing to have. And I'm gonna cut the intro a little short there because I've got a bit of announcement to make at the end of the podcast, so stick around at the end for that announcement. But today we have Phil Spittler. He is a mentor at Block, and he's been mentoring for quite some time, and he's been coding for quite some time. He got a very interesting way of getting into the actual field, and he talks about that. He is pretty knowledgeable. Yeah, we get into some back and forths about interviewing techniques and junior developers and how the community itself is embracing them. And yeah, I found that pretty interesting. So hopefully you guys do too. And here's Phil.
My name is Phil Spittler, and I'm a mentor with Block. I've been a web application developer since around 99, and eventually worked my way into the field of education, which I'm quite happy to be here. When I was introduced to Block, I didn't quite know that things like this existed, online boot camps and stuff, and now I've been here for 2 years, and I'm quite excited about it, so that's what I do. I meet with several students per week, and all at various different stages in various different courses and tracks. And what's unique and exciting about being a mentor is I like challenges, and I get a steady dose of not only ones that I find myself when I'm programming, but you know, students always are challenged in various different ways, and to help them solve their problems, it's just kind of like feeding me a little more.
I have I don't know if I have a unique way of getting into actual programming, but I find a lot of people I have on this do have unique ways of getting into program. So I wanted to find out, how did you get into programming per se before you got into mentorship?
Right, that's a good long story. I love to tell it. I've told it many times actually to just friends and family and people who ask me about what I do and how I got into it. So that's awesome. I'm happy to answer it. So it was probably around 1997. I was hanging out on the top of a warehouse where I DJed. So I was basically an old school rave DJ, into breaks at the time. I like house music now, but tastes change over time. Anyway, so I'm hanging out, and I was working at Pizza Hut at the time, and a buddy of mine who was hanging out up there with me worked at VNet, an internet access company, and he was like, hey, would you, you know stuff about computers, because I actually worked on music even back then. He was like, you know a little bit about computers. I work for VNet. Would you like to come interview for a customer service position? And I was like, yeah, it sounds great. You know, it's better than, you know, making pizzas. So essentially, he brought me in. I interviewed with his manager, and they brought me on as a customer service rep. And so that's cool. I'm helping people, you know, actually connect to the internet, like when they have troubles dialing in. And it ended up becoming more of a tech support role for me rather than a customer service role, just because that's what I was kind of into, is problem solving. And one problem that I had, though, that I couldn't get away from was when we would take applications for people signing up for internet access, we would pull out a sheet of paper, write it all down by hand, their name, their phone number, their fax number, what they wanted their email address to be. And then we would give it to the billing department, and then someone in the billing department would run their card and then give it to a sysadmin. The sysadmin would create them a shell account and basically give it back to us as a sheet of paper. And then we had to fill out another sheet of paper that was a fact sheet that had some account information on it and stuff that we would send the user. And I was like, we're a technology company. I have no idea why we're doing this manually on paper. So rather than anything else, I just decided that we had one web guy, and he, like, I mean, his hands were, like, he was totally tied up all the time, and it was just the beginning of the web, and he was doing all kinds of new stuff. And so I went to one of my sysadmins and was like, if I want to make this a web form, and that's exactly how I said it, if I want to make this a web form, what would I learn to do that? And he told me Perl. We ran Apache servers, and he's like, you know, Perl CGI. And so I was like, okay, I got a bunch of Perl books, and I attempted to teach myself, although I went back to him several times, which was cool, because I didn't realize that it was kind of like an implicit mentor that he was to me when I couldn't get past something that was in a book. But what I ended up doing was taking the form, putting it online. It wrote to a Berkeley DB, which is like a flat file database, and essentially emailed all the different steps until the final step, which we got to print out the fact sheet. So it goes from like a form to eventually a view that I get that I can just print out. That was the form that we'd fax. So no more handwriting or anything like that. So we used that for a couple of years. It was adopted by the company. We used it for a couple of years, and we ended up getting bought by a larger company. The whole time I'm still learning more about Unix, more about just programming in general, just little tools here and there. And when they had an opening in their web department, I went to the president of the former company, the smaller company that got bought by the larger company. He was still kind of high up in the company that absorbed us. And so when I went to him, I asked him, when I saw the position was available, I said, hey, Bob, is there any way you can get me an interview? And he said, I'll ask them and I'll see what I can do. And so the next thing I know, you know, I'm getting set up for an interview with their head of their web department, which there was only like three people there. And he, he liked my enthusiasm. They were actually doing Cold Fusion. I looked at it and was like, I could easily pick this up after learning Perl. And so I picked it up, and they brought me on kind of temporary for a week, and then they're like, yeah, let's roll with them. And so they brought me on, and from then on, you know, you have work history, you can get, you can keep going. And in fact, actually, I ended up with a lot of work history working for him, because he moved to another company. And within like a month, he actually got me to move over there with him. So it ended up being like a 6-year relationship. So then after 6 years, that's a long time to, that's enough time to really build a career off of. But unfortunately, I had to decide to stop my dreams of becoming an international superstar DJ. Because I was like, okay, so now this is a real career that I found my way in. And so, I mean, if I had to distill that into a very small summary, it would be that I personally believe that anybody with enough grit and determination to solve problems and like will also be willing to make the right contacts you need, that goes a very long way of getting your foot in the door. Because without the contacts, without me being really good friends with our, with what was the president of VNet, then even after moving companies, keeping in contact with him over the two and a half years until I actually landed up in that job, staying on good terms and staying in communication with allowed me the ability to ask him for that in. And then prior to that, without the grit and determination to solve this problem, like I was going to solve, like there was nothing that was going to stop me from solving that. I'm going to work till 3 a.m. every day. I'm going to learn. It really is true that if you're determined to do anything in life, I absolutely believe it's possible, because until you give up, that's the only way you can fail.
That's cool. And that's actually a really good point to make, too, as far as, like, because I know you worked with a lot, you work with a lot of students that are just learning, like, beginning code. And a lot of people don't understand that code's basically you fail until you succeed. And then you move to another failure once you succeed on that one. So, and it's persistence. That's pretty much all it is when it comes to
absolutely. I totally agree. It's strange. And I don't necessarily, I think you can gain the taste for hitting your head against the brick wall until you overcome something. But if it's ingrained in you already, if for some reason that type of challenge, just like you love that itch you can't scratch until like you get it. And then it just feels like, you know, absolute ecstasy because it's like, you've just solved this thing that you've been working on so hard. That's one of the best feelings, and it drives me pretty much every day.
You got into programming. I guess you kind of like snuck your way into programming by getting into customer service, basically. So I assume that you don't have a degree in the actual field.
That's correct. Yeah. And in fact, I'm always kind of proud to say that I have my 10th grade GED. That I have a GED out of 10th grade.
Yeah.
Essentially. I didn't even graduate like your typical graduation of high school. And it really, when I came on with Block, it really, when I started working with people who I could tell were driven to learn this, to change their life. I mean, it was like seeing my story all over again through somebody else's eyes for someone else and to help them get there now. It was like the best, it's the best form of giving back that I could ever do. And I believe this industry is, when I say this industry, of course, development spans across different types of industries, but just the software development industry in general, it's one of the few places where you can just learn and work your tail off in any capacity, show what you know how to do, and get a job for it. You know, there's not a lot of other businesses. I mean, in order to get position X, you need your MBA, you know, and you know, programming is not like that. If you're crushing it on GitHub, like then you can pick up a job. In fact, I mean, several people get jobs by just posting enough to a project on GitHub that's owned by a company. And they're like, hey, come work for us.
Yeah. It's interesting because I found, so I don't know how much you know about my story, but I actually was getting my MBA. Before I actually started Block as a student. And basically what happened was my first actual paper in the actual MBA program that I had to do for my first class was about Google. And I basically figured like, oh, these guys wrote code. They learned how to do code like really well. And now I have a business around it. And it inspired me to learn code of my own, and which made me take a semester off from my MBA, which I never went. I actually went back, but then only took one class. That semester I took off, I just completed Block in 12 weeks. And I was like, oh, let me see how far I can take this. And I could always do the MBA later. And it turned out now I'm here working for Block, sitting here in one of their
nice conferences. Yeah. I forget all the time that you went through the program. I forget that all the time because, I see you crushing it at your job, and I don't even think twice about like the fact that you were an apprentice at one point. Yeah. So that's pretty cool.
I appreciate that.
Absolutely. So much for backup plans.
Yeah. So I guess I would assume that you've had no hindrance, I guess, without having no degree and no formal skill set in the field.
No. I mean, actually, the one time I was challenged. Which I wrote a post on Medium about.
Yeah, I read this one, which I was going to ask about too. So yeah,
right.
Go ahead.
That's really the only challenge that I've had. It was essentially when I was asked about how to walk a binary tree, and I was like, well, you're going to have to tell me what a binary tree kind of looks like and what it's used for. I mean, that's the only time really, and it was after I told the guy that I didn't have any, you know, I didn't have a formal CS degree, and I explicitly said, anything you can ask me, object-oriented related, I've gotten so interested in building things in a maintainable way that it took me to OO land, and essentially I've lived there for like the last every year up until that point. And yet you'd probably stump me on some algorithms because that's not something that I never went to school for that. And then he's like, he broke out the, can you walk a binary tree? I'm like, well, you know, maybe with a recursive function. I mean, there's one way I could figure, like, once he explained what it was. But it was still painful to try to walk through, like, on the fly, not even really knowing about that sort of thing. So other than that, though, most interviews, they've looked at what I've done in the past, what I've done on GitHub. We've talked about higher level concepts. My absolute, almost, it's a maintainability is, I mean, that's just that's the thing I pay attention to most. If code isn't maintainable, because I've been brought in on so many projects that have been so painful to work on, it's like you're trudging through mud. Because, you know, people just were like, oh, yeah, just throw it in the user model. You know, I mean, just because, you know, and they'll say things like, you know, well, you know, Yagni, we're not going to need to refactor this thing. We're not going to need to, like, write good code. And I'm like, no, you're throwing Yagni around for the wrong reason.
Yeah.
So anyway, to go back to your question, sorry, I rambled a little. To go back to your question, it's only really hindered me that one time. And, I have a feeling it's kind of geographical in nature. If I live further west, especially in San Francisco, it would hinder me a lot more. Because what it is in Charlotte, people like need developers so bad. I mean, all the time. We need developers so bad, and there are boot camps that are actually popping up here locally to try to cover that need. But like out in San Francisco, there's tons of developers who go out there because that's where a ton of startups are. And unfortunately, I think that the issue there is more of a market issue. There needs to be a way to, I guess, make sure you're getting the best developers. And that's the way that's been determined to do so. I think it's highly dependent on the market.
Yeah, and I got to test that firsthand because I got my first job in Orlando, Florida, which is East Coast as well. And I didn't have to... As far as like show my code, I actually showed all my block projects, which was my interview.
Right, cool.
And I basically just talked through them, and like this made like confirmed to them that I actually understood how it worked, rather than like, oh, I followed a tutorial and this is like how I did it and that's about it. But I actually could like tell them, yeah, I used this gem because I want to do geolocation. This is how geolocation works, and then that was the hardest thing. Like basically, this interviewed me mainly on soft skills and anything, and that was easy. But I know. For block, we actually did a whiteboarding, but it wasn't like super intense. It was just like, hey, draw pictures and like tell me, like point to this and tell me how this works more than actual writing code. But I know here, like, especially because you've got like Stanford, you got Berkeley, you've got all these like big schools that are in the engineering, and like even people from the East Coast come here for the startups, like you said, that they have to have like that weird gate of like, okay, binary tree, tell me what it is, now draw it, now do it in Go. Yeah. Also do C++, and they have to have those like weird limitations just to like gate out, you know, the lesser of talent, I guess. But I don't see it. That's the case outside of this like circle of influence. Like, yes, if you know a binary tree and you're in Charlotte, I'm sure you have no problem getting a job. You have to know how to write code too. But
You might have to tell your boss / the senior developers, like how what a binary tree is and how to walk it. And the only reason why I say that, it's kind of everything that I've seen out here is that if you know how to solve problems and you know how to solve them in a maintainable way, it doesn't matter. Like if I stumble upon a binary tree because it's the best way to solve a problem, then fine. If I'm running into performance issues and I have to whatever I have to do, like if there's a sorting algorithm that I need to, you know, invoke or anything like that, then okay, I'll come across it. But essentially all that will come after maintainability. I'm going to write it in an extremely maintainable way. Like all the abstractions are going to be like spot on to where they're completely not only reusable but extendable. And then essentially if performance is an issue at some point, then refactor to that. But going straight to that first and basically filtering people also on how performant they can make things before you even like know what they're gonna write, I don't know. It just seems kind of putting the cart before the horse and a little silly to me.
Yeah.
And I mean, as a mentor to people, of all kinds of backgrounds, whether it's they've gone to school or not. I've actually worked with people who had been to computer science and they ended up like leaving, like they couldn't afford it or whatever, for whatever reason stopped. And like they remember those things, but it doesn't, I don't know. It'll probably bring something to the table. Like you said, if they're interviewing out there, but when it comes to like solving problems, this is, I guess, the most poignant way I can put it. I don't understand how being able to demonstrate that you can solve one particular type of problem with one particular type of thing that's made to solve that specific type of problem. I don't understand how that shows how you have problem solving skills. It shows that you've memorized a particular thing to solve a particular problem.
Yeah.
Keyword being particular. And, you know, in the programming world, problems crop up all the time, which aren't a certain set of, you know, that aren't like that specific set of problems. So it seems like it would be a truer test of skills to interview someone on, you know, just some random thing they've never ran into before that you feel that you might would want to put on your website, or you know, just has something to do with the type of business that you're running, and see how like they would organize the data, like organize the code.
Yeah.
But not having a certain like set of something in mind, because, you know, give them an opportunity to impress you with something that maybe you've never thought of.
And I think, I don't remember if I'm mixing two competing companies together. It's either Uber or Lyft or one of the two, that when they interview what specific problems that they're facing today, or maybe they have already solved. Yeah. And basically, so if it could be solved with the binary tree, yeah, so be it. But they'll hand you the problem and say, here, solve this problem. How would you approach it? And you can kind of, you can get the like, if they know binary trees at that point, it makes them, that's a plus, because they know how to solve it with that, if that's the right way to do it. Or if they use, like, right. Hey, I know in JavaScript is like this, a plugin that actually will give me benchmarks and we can test it, and like, whatever it is, like, rather than like pinpointing to some computer science concept. So I get where you're like tracking with as far as this.
Right.
Also, to play a little bit of devil's advocate too, I feel like if the position itself is quote unquote senior, then I think, okay, if you really want to gate seniors and what a senior is, then yeah, so be it. Do binary tree. But I think a lot of the problem is there'll be like this generic like junior developer job or like regular developer job that wants to do everything. Like, I've seen job postings where it's like, hey, we want you to do iOS, Android, we want you to do front end, back end, want to do React for 10 years, also know Swift for 17 years too. Like, and, you know, inside joke, those technologies have been around less than 4 years. But, you know, this,
right.
Like, it's
yeah, really I agree with you. The fact that juniors are being gated with this stuff, yeah, you're absolutely right. That's like probably my biggest, if you want to call it beef, my biggest beef with the whole issue of asking computer science questions is it's like in some weird guys that not weird guys, but G-U-I-S-E. it's under the guise of we need the best developers, but it's for roles that you're like entry level. And so the thing is, like, I can't imagine. I mean, the only thing I want out of an entry level developer, if I'm going to be hiring one, is for them to have this insatiable desire to learn and solve problems and just go after stuff. That's what I want out of a junior developer, you know, and for them to have like the language skills of the language we're working in. Yes. But the deeper knowledge of computer science and all that for a junior level position, it doesn't add up to me. It's like you want a senior developer at a junior price. I mean, that's the only thing I can think of is the reason you would go about doing it that way.
Yeah. And I think, the latter is pretty much the case. A lot of companies, yeah. I run into a lot of companies, obviously being in the Bay Area and having that on my LinkedIn, I'll get recruiters or companies like reaching out to me, or even just being in the Bay Area, you'll get that. And they're looking for someone cheap who's brand new. And I actually met a guy who actually just started his startup in Austin, who literally said, like, he gave a talk about like startups and literally said, like, go on the LinkedIn, look for people who only have 1 year of experience, because those are the people who are quote unquote hungry, but will also take a pay cut to do it. So I mean, that's the angle they're looking for. They're looking for someone who's willing to learn really quickly and know a lot of stuff at a cheaper price. So unfortunately, you just have to be wary of that. I mean, if it's beneficial to you to take that, then go for it. But understand, that's what they're looking for. They're looking to work you.
Right. Yeah. So, and I always try to explain this to the students I'm working with is that it really depends on where they are, you know, the geographically, like we spoke about, and also, you know, how great their need is to, I guess, land a job quickly.
Yeah.
Quickly. Because the thing is, if the lay of the land changes, it will be because of a movement that, I don't know, it seems to be getting a little traction. To try to break down the walls of the computer science questions for junior developers. I think that could come up, but it's going to take a few years. It's not just going to, like, all of a sudden nobody's going to start, you know, nobody's going to be asking those questions anymore. So if you need something soon, or you're willing to, I guess, forego what you could learn in fundamentals for, like, learning the trick questions they might ask you so you can get the job, then, like, that's one angle you can go. But if, you know, if you understand that you don't really need those skills to do that particular job, and you would rather work with people who didn't try to filter you in that way, then hold out. Go to those interviews, try to pick up as much as you can. If they're giving you those questions and you're like, I'm sorry, I you know, that's not something I've studied. I want to solve problems for you, but I don't know about, you know, this particular computer science concept you're asking me. Could you tell me more about it since we're here? Like, I'm probably not getting the job, but since you're interviewing me, let's talk about it. And so, like, that's a good way to pick those skills up along the way, if that's what, you know, so you'll be better off later. That's, I guess, a practical approach to what you could do with that. Or you could try to make a point and maybe help them, educate them that, hey, maybe that's not the best way to filter people. Like, you can be like, if you haven't gone to my GitHub, here's the 10 awesome things that I built. Why don't you look at that? And I'm going to get up now and leave because this is a waste of my time. And that's okay. Like, it's okay for a junior to feel that way. If they feel like they're being asked questions and kind of bullied in an interview, then I would hope that they would feel okay to stand up and be like, I'm sorry, you clearly know that I don't know the answer to the next question, and yet you're continuing to ask me these questions, and so I just don't feel comfortable anymore.
Yeah.
It's okay to be that way. You're not being brass crass is the right word. You're not being crass or anything. It's just that, I don't know.
And it's good to understand too, like, interviews is a really good way to learn and, like, test your skill too. Like, you don't know what you don't know is, like, basically the thing that in programming that's always going to be there. And if you're interviewing, like, granted, if you're, like, looking for a new job, like, make sure you have a couple interviews lined up. Like, you're talking to quite a few different people, because the interview that you didn't get before could actually help you in the next interview, because those questions that maybe you didn't expect or understand at first, like, any question that I did 5 interviews when I graduated Block, and any question I couldn't answer, like, you better believe, like, I studied like crazy on that question, so that way the next time it came up, if it did come up, I don't think actually questions actually repeated themselves in my interviews, but I was able to, like, be an expert at that, at least for those questions I didn't know, and because of that, you know.
Right. Yeah, absolutely. But you know, all those companies, they're getting together behind, like, the scenes and actually making sure they don't ask the same question, right?
They have a question pool. It's actually it's generated in Cold Fusion.
Right. In Cold Fusion, yeah. Going back to that was a very interesting language. And I will say it's still around. It got a bunch of pull in the government, like a bunch of government work was done in Cold Fusion, so now, you know, it's around forever. But it's just it makes it so easy to write code inside of HTML that it's just it's like this gateway to horribly, like, what's the word I'm looking for, coupled code. Like, I mean, it's like you cannot couple your code any worse than that. Yeah, put the SQL at the top of your HTML.
Yeah, that's pretty cool. So, I have one more question for you before we jump off. But since you have experience of a couple different languages, there's just, like, this big movement about doing full stack JavaScript and JavaScript on the front end and back end. I know you do front end and back end mentoring, I think. What's your opinion? Because we get even at Block, we get this question all the time. why aren't you teaching X? Why aren't you teaching Y? And which language should I learn first? What's your question to that question of what should I learn first?
What should you learn first? The answer that there's actually two different answers to two different questions. It sounds like you're asking. So I'll start with what language should I learn first? Just in general, if you're learning to program, and my answer is always the same: Ruby, hands down. And if anyone asked me why, if you could forget about all the business applications and you could show me the Ruby programming language, and somebody asked me, just like in a vacuum, why was this language written? And I would say, to teach people how to program. That's essentially how the way Ruby is structured, is in such a way that it's extremely easy to teach, and it's probably the easiest language to pick up, because it makes it extremely easy to model the real world. In regards to what language, what about this or that or another thing? Node comes up a whole lot. The thing is, of course, all Node is JavaScript. I'm guessing the listeners who listen to your show understand that it's JavaScript that runs on the server. We can talk more about that, but just to answer your question, knowing server-side and client-side JavaScript is pretty powerful. Quite honestly, I was a Ruby developer for like 6 years, and then all of a sudden I got this Node project. I stepped my way onto a Node project because it was very interesting to me. And before then, I had just known like jQuery and a couple other like little JavaScript things for the front end. And then they were like, we need a streaming server for stock quotes. And I was like, okay, this sounds really cool. And then I learned about WebSockets, Socket.io, and started diving into like really deep, deep JavaScript, understanding callbacks. And, you know, I even was like, hey, we need to look into promises. And the thing is, it's weird coming from a back-end programmer's perspective, looking at JavaScript, it's not that difficult. Coming from a completely novice perspective, JavaScript's like kind of this, you know, big hairball. I mean, there's, you know, Douglas Crockford's, you know, book, JavaScript, the Good Parts, is because there's a lot of bad parts to JavaScript, and it makes it kind of difficult to learn if it's not distilled in the right way. And I have to say that our curriculum does it very well.
Yeah.
So, long answer, but...
Cool. Awesome. Yeah, I contested that. JavaScript, not only that, like, the Good Parts is a really good analogy, to that, not just that it's a book, but, like, JavaScript has a lot of, like, legacy that you have to understand in order to understand, like, today's JavaScript. Like, I think ES6 or 2015 is actually pretty approachable. But it's unfortunate that it's so approachable because there's still things in it that you still have to understand ES5 and ES3 and like still understand, like, you're going to see a prototype and be like, what's a prototype? Why is this even here? And then you have to figure out what that is. And then everything's a function. And then you got this weird like extra things that they've kind of like this like duct tape stuff on top of it. So unfortunately, you kind of have to, there's a lot of JavaScript you have to know in order to do JavaScript. Which shouldn't be a hindrance. I think everybody should know JavaScript well. I think it actually is pretty powerful for your career to know it pretty well.
Yeah.
But I think I would reiterate what you said. Ruby is definitely, hands down, one of the easiest languages to approach for a beginner. Aside from like all the other like jargon that people like complain about it for, to learn programming, it's good.
Oh, yeah, absolutely. Every language has, you know, pros and cons, and that's just the way it is. The language that I know get me what I need until there's something that I don't know that I needed, and then I would look into, you know, using something else that's more streamlined for it. But for definitely for learning purposes and for fast prototyping, and even, you know, if you craft your code in the right way, then I mean, you can put the right servers and stuff behind it to make Ruby quite performant. It catches a bunch of flack, but and everybody knows what the flack is that it catches. Essentially every tool is good for a certain job that's out there, or else it wouldn't be so prevalent.
Yeah. Very cool. Awesome. So we didn't get a chance to talk about your music. Are you doing any music like currently today, or are you just doing it on the side?
Yeah. Yeah, I just do it on the side, and what'll happen is like I'll hear a melody or hear a beat, and I'll just have to like jump into Ableton and like whip through it. And then what I'll end up doing is I'll throw like a master like limiter on it and stuff just to get the levels good, and then I'll throw it up on SoundCloud, and it's usually just like a build like an intro building into like what would be probably like just before a break, or maybe it's the break, and then essentially that's it. It just like kind of loops for a little bit and that's it, because I haven't taken it anywhere. Like I haven't done anything with the effects to like manage the transitions or anything like that. It's just like I had this idea in my head and so I had to put it out. But if anybody cares, and if you're still recording this, then it's a bit shifty, ABITSHIFTY on SoundCloud. So
cool. Well, I think we could probably go on and on about music, so I'll end it there. But do you have some of the blog posts that you're writing, and then are you on Twitter or anything, or I think you're on Medium?
Yeah, so I'm pretty much at Phil Spittler everywhere on Twitter, Medium. I mean, those are the two main places where I post anything. I'm considering doing a YouTube channel for, you know, just more advanced skills, maybe doing a few screencasts, but that has yet to come.
Cool. Well, nice talk, Phil. I appreciate you coming on, and hopefully we'll talk again in the future.
Absolutely. I appreciate you having me, for sure.
So that was Phil Spittler, everybody. Phil is actually, he's a pretty great guy. He's pretty passionate about what he does. He's passionate about teaching, which is like a huge asset to have at Block for sure. We didn't get to mention it while recording. We actually mentioned it after I stopped recording. But Phil is actually giving a conference talk at the Ruby Remote Conf, which is going to be 100% online June 22nd. And he's going to give a talk about why the framework ate your code. It's actually pretty intriguing. He gave me a little insight to what he's going to be talking about. And I'm pretty interested. I imagine most people that are listening to this will be interested, regardless if you write Ruby or not. So highly check it out. I'll put the link in the show notes for that. Also, I'll put some of the links for the blog post and his SoundCloud and everything in the show notes, so check it out. So finally, my announcement that I'm actually going to be making. I have put my 2 weeks in Block last week. So my last day actually will be next Tuesday. And so my time at Block is actually ending. Though, despite that my time at Block is ending as an employee, I'll still be as much involved as an alumni as I was prior to even joining and becoming an employee at Block. But there is an opportunity that has arisen, which I just couldn't turn down. And I will be talking about that later, maybe probably next week, more details about what I'm doing. I will be starting my new employment next week. Though I'm sad to go, and I didn't think I was going to be leaving this soon, for sure. I thought I would have been here for quite a while. I definitely appreciate everybody I've worked with, everybody I've been able to talk to because of working at Block. I did a lot of talking to people who've gone through Block before I became an employee. It's been increased exponentially since I've actually become an employee at Block. And I love giving people avenues of learning how to code, whether they choose Block or they choose something else. I think that this is something that's very attainable. Being an engineer or a software developer, it's very attainable for people. And I don't think a lot of people know this, that they actually make the transition as easily as me or someone else can do. So, and I use the word easy as it's very relative. I don't know if my transition was that easy, but I put a lot of hard work in. And I think if you have the hard work and you're willing to put in the effort, you could be very much sitting in the same position as me, which is working for a company and writing code for a living. So again, that's basically my announcement. So with that being said, there shouldn't be an interruption in the podcast. But if there is, I'll do a quick update and let you guys know. But as for now, I do most of my recording here at Block. So I will have to get a new space, but I think I'll be pretty good on that as far as where I'll be recording. And you probably won't see any changes as far as the podcast go. Other than that, you guys have a good week. I'm going to hit record just for posterity, and that way I don't forget to record.
Yeah, I understand. Anything can be edited out, right?